Is education an area where Alaska could lead the world? Yeah, I said the world. We continue our discussion today. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Today, your chance to meet some consultants who did their work internationally while they were still students. If you want to join in, our number is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. In Anchorage, a local call at 550-8422. Email talk@alaskapublic.org. Education and what it could mean for the world's needs is the subject on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by First National Bank Alaska, offering business solutions to help Alaska's dreams grow for 90 years. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. And by Providence Imaging Center, with Drs. Scott Nespinski and Christopher Reed, providing interpretations of imaging studies with a focus on musculoskeletal radiology, provimaging.com. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the microphone Dr. Alex Hills. How you doing?
Fine, Steve. Good morning.
You're a distinguished service professor, and today we're getting into the distinguished service part of it, I think, huh?
Mm-hmm. We have some students here.
Yeah. And when you say distinguished service, what distinguishes it?
It's a special title they dreamed up for for people that have, you know, I'm hardly ever asked that question, but
we put all this signage around a person, nobody ever questions it.
Yeah, well, I mean, sometimes I say that it's easier to give me a fancy title than a lot of money. So that'd be one answer. But seriously, it's a title they dreamed up for people who have done some things outside of the academic world. So it's distinguished service. So the emphasis is on service.
So you have one student and three alumni here.
Right.
And because we only have so many microphones, we're going to shuffle them in and out. So the callers who would like to engage with any particular ones, you just have a limited period of time. And our telephone number, I'll remind you, is 1-800-478-8255. A local call from Anchorage at 550-8422. And Alex, this thing reminded me a lot of the Peace Corps. And do the students have to like volunteer for this program? I mean, this is really above and beyond the call of duty, I would think.
Well, probably the most important thing is that all of these people that you're looking at have professional skills that they gain from their education at Carnegie Mellon that are valuable in lots of places, including developing nations. And so where they could be in the summertime working on Wall Street for the big bucks, instead they choose to volunteer to work on these projects in developing nations. And they do apply for the program. It's not a required part of their education, but many of them say that it was the most important part of their education and in some cases actually a life-changing experience.
Well, I think it would have been for me if I'd have had the chance to do it. I mean, how could it not? All of a sudden, you're plunged into an entirely different world, and you're also expected to be a leader. I think that's the thing that fascinates me the most, is that the expectations are so high of these people. Internships are getting better than they used to be. Used to be the intern went and fetched the coffee and did all that sort of thing. Lately, interns come into our operation, I know, really expecting to learn a lot and have to be able to apply the skills that they've acquired in school. And this seems to be, you know, even more along those lines, because they often go out alone, right?
In some cases alone. One of our people here did actually work on a project alone, and sometimes they go in pairs. But the big distinction is that these people go in as consultants. They are going in as full professionals with certain skills to offer, and the consultants have previously been identified as people who have the skills to meet the needs in this particular place for this particular client organization.
Carnegie Mellon, of course, used to be called Carnegie Institute of Technology, and it's still pretty big on the tech stuff. I mean, you're a pretty techie guy yourself.
Absolutely. Computer technology, robotics. In fact, I think everyone in the room here has some serious familiarization with computer technology, one civil engineer, but still, she's pretty good with computers.
Mm-hmm. I remember when I was in radio in Pittsburgh, and I had a guy in to interview, and he was Clarence Zener, and he was a faculty member, it's emeritus, I think, at that time. And my chief engineer had to tell me after I had interviewed him, I was interviewing about his energy schemes, he said, "That's the Dr. Zener. He invented the Zener diode."
That was a pretty big deal back in the day.
It was a damn big deal, and I actually got to interview the guy right there in Pittsburgh. Well, okay, let's meet our student professionals. And actually, I think the first one we'll do is an alumnus, Ali Muba. MS in Information Systems Management, it says here. And you went to Rwanda in 2010. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Steve.
And you have you now progressed and have moved into a job in Chicago, you were telling me?
Right, correct. Yeah, I'm doing consulting work there.
And tell me about that. What does that involve?
So it involves me dealing with clients, trying to understand their needs. We are working on the sustainability market. So I go in and try to understand the client, their needs, and see how the software we develop can help them achieve those needs.
Yeah. And you went to Rwanda. How did that matchup occur? Tell me more about that. I know that Alex spent time there.
Okay, so definitely in Rwanda, the project was definitely client-driven, while I was there, I learned a lot of skills that I'm using now, how to engage with clients, how to make the clients talk, define correctly the problems, and making sure that, while we're working on the project, we're addressing the right problems and finding solutions that we all agree upon.
And now you're from Guinea?
Yes, I was born in Guinea. Guinea is a nation in West Africa. It's about 9 million people.
Was that anything at all like Rwanda?
Yes, it was. It was pretty similar. So,
really?
Yeah. So I was having, when I was there, I was observing the Rwandan society, and I was having flashback memories of my time in Guinea, and also from visiting Guinea quite often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and as I understand it, Rwanda is a country where there's been a great emphasis on education, on higher education. That must be kind of interesting.
Yes, lately the current president is actually pushing hard for it. I know the government of Rwanda is working in partnership with Carnegie Mellon University, and I believe they opened the campus there to help educate the next IT leaders in East Africa.
Alex?
That's a connected to Alimo's volunteer work. Alimo worked for a residential high school, which is aimed primarily at the children of the genocide victims who are still in high school, mostly. So that was his project. In addition to that, our university has established a satellite campus in the capital of Rwanda, and this is the first year of operation, so we just started a new group of students just about a month ago.
So what was the needs? I can imagine the needs don't even end in a project like that.
Well, Alimo could probably tell you about the priorities, IT priorities of the president of Rwanda and his vision for the future. That would help to explain the campus.
I'm sorry.
So President Kagame has established a mission for the country to become the information technology center for East Africa, and that's where Carnegie Mellon comes in.
Pushing hard,
mm-hmm.
You said. So tell me about what you actually did for the school.
Okay, so the school is called Agahozo Shalom Youth Village. It's a nonprofit organization founded about 4 years ago. And the mission of the school is to educate the students who are orphaned because of the genocide that happened there in 1994.
It was a Tutsi and Hutu,
Yes, Tutsi and Hutu, and close to 800,000 Tutsi lost their lives during the genocide.
Let's say, just an inconceivable thing.
Right. So, so I was there for 10 weeks with another Carnegie Mellon student, Jin Sub Kim, who was pursuing a bachelor in computer science. Jin Sub was from South Korea. He had lived in India and China as well. So while I was in Rwanda, you know, I was learning about South Korea, India, and China with Chinsap. And we actually worked on many consulting tasks. The main ones, we helped build two computer labs. When we were there, the school had just received 200 computers. Those were donated from the nation of South Korea. Jinsap didn't have nothing to do with that, but it was just a big coincidence, you know.
It might have helped him figure out the instruction manuals.
It actually did. It actually did. He was able to read the, because all the boxes, the writings on the back boxes were in South Korean, so he was able to read it and let us know, you know, which institute some of these computers came from, you know.
And so there would be a computer lab, so then the kids would have access to the computers.
To computers, right. So the school was growing. They were expecting more students. So these computers were definitely needed in the school. They actually had a few computer labs, but it was not enough, you know, for the students to use. So at the end, we built two computer labs.
How about the maintenance on all this? If you were to go back right now, do you think they'd still be operating? Would probably have some new equipment and everything. But one of the things that seems to happen is that and I know you know this, Alex, is that you get these well-intentioned people. We used to get in Appalachia all the time in West Virginia. And we come in and they get everybody organized and they get this project and then they leave and everything. The whole thing falls apart because there's been no skills transfer.
Exactly. So, you know, this is where we come in place. And, you know, we were really prepared because of the program we were in. You know, these are topics we addressed, you know, during our orientation, the sustainability part. You know, we don't just want to go in Rwanda, do all this great stuff, leave, and then this great stuff leaves with us, you know. Nobody else uses it, and it's just memories. So, you know, while we were building these computers, we actually helped start a computer IT club, you know, with the students. You know, it was like the Agahozo Shalom own geek squad there, you know. While we were building, designing, we engaged the students. They were, you know, involved in the process. We taught them how to install these computers, how, you know, networks worked, give them a lot of instruction so that once we left, they were able to carry on that task. So that was how we were able to address the sustainability part of that project. And a lot of these students were really enthusiastic about, you know, IT. It's the next big thing in East Africa. You know, everybody has a smartphone or a cell phone. So they were really enthusiastic in learning about it. And, you know, I'm confident right now. I'm sure if I go back, you know, they probably have more skills than we taught them.
I should probably mention that sustainability is one of our themes. This is we have a whole philosophy about how to do these consulting projects, and students are briefed on all that in advance. So sustainability is probably the number one point, is that to do all the training and arrangements that are necessary to make sure that things will survive after we leave.
Okay, yeah, thanks. Ali Mu, if you'd like to speak with Ali Mu Ba, the telephone number is 1-800-478-8255. How many times did you have to call Dr. Hills when you were there?
Well, actually, Dr. Hill called us.
He called you. It all comes out now.
It was just a couple of times. That was it.
All right. Thanks. Let's turn to Ramona Tamrat. Do I have that?
Tamrat.
From Washington, D.C., but also from Ethiopia.
Yes. I was born in the States, but all of my family was from Ethiopia. So my sister and I were all first generation born in the U.S.,
and you ended up going to Peru.
I did, yeah. I just got back only a few weeks ago.
Wow.
So still fresh.
So and you're actually still a student at CMU, so you had to be excused probably and have all kinds of homework and stuff to do while
you're
here.
Yeah, I had to do a lot of preparation before coming and still here. But I'm a senior, civil engineering major.
Civil engineering?
Mm-hmm. A little bit different from technology consulting.
Yeah, yeah, but there's been notable civil engineering come out of Carnegie Tech down through the years.
Definitely, definitely.
Yeah. So were you building a dam in Peru? What were you doing?
I wasn't. I was partnered with a K-12 school called Colegio Antonio Raimondi, and the school, they did have some IT needs, but in those first couple weeks when I was down there, really understanding how the school worked and what kind of problems or opportunities that were available, we discovered that the real root or overarching problem was an organizational problem, and the fact that this family business needed to transition very soon, and they were kind of avoiding this sensitive topic that many family businesses avoid. So I ended up doing some management consulting and proposing a couple of models on how to do a succession plan in a family business, which
wow.
is, you know, sometimes you get thrown into situations and everything changes.
There's probably quite a few businesses in Alaska that could use that type of
Everywhere.
Expertise right now.
Everywhere.
So if I can, I found it really interesting how you you couched it professionally, which I would expect, but essentially you get a situation here where there's an institution that's run by one person and it's undecided what's going to happen when that person gets too old to do it anymore.
Exactly. The founder of the school is still, she's getting in her 70s and she still works every day and she's kind of the head decision maker, but it's getting to that point in a few years. Her son, who's currently the director, will probably be taking over. And I say probably because no one has made any real decisions on how to move forward. And she has three other children, and they need to, you know, really plan out the ownership breakdown and structural.
The British used to have all this worked out. First son, second son, third son. Daughters didn't matter.
It's really a common problem. In a family-owned business, they run it very often more like a family than a business, and there are certain sensitive subjects, and this is one of them. So it took someone like Carmona to come in and sort of break the ice and show them some models, and we turned her into an instant management consultant.
So when did you realize what was really needed out of you in this situation?
I think it was during the second week. I'd had a number of conversations and meetings with the director of the school, who was also my main point of contact. And this was when Dr. Hills came down for his site visit. And in one of those meetings, he mentioned that it was really important that he's, you know, we don't know what we're going to do next. So I need to kind of take over, but I don't know how to approach this. And so we kind of realized that that was really the root of all the problems.
Uh-huh. And so there you were in your own little office.
Yeah. It was kind of a big office. I was uh-huh. you know, surprised.
Next door to the, what do they call the president, the manager, the executive director? What was she?
I guess she would be the CEO uh-huh. officially.
Right. Yeah. Would you try and have conversations with her about this? Or?
Oh, yeah.
That's how you worked
it? I did. Because I guess it was when you're in the family, it's a lot more difficult. It would
sure.
be much harder for the director, Raphael, to go in and speak to his mother about these things. But I came down there for that purpose. And so it would definitely be easier for me to speak with her on this. So
Carmona also developed a strong personal relationship with Cecilia, the CEO, and that was really the key to it. There was a trust there. And so when Carmona brought up the subject or did her briefing, there was some confidence in what she had to say.
I get the feeling just from watching the way you talk about them that you feel like you're part of the family now.
Oh, they are the nicest and greatest people to work with, honestly.
Cool. So do you get to go back there or is the project wrapped up?
The project is wrapped up, but, you know, Peru is a beautiful country that has so many historical sites from the ruins of the Incan civilization, and I would love to go back.
Uh-huh.
It's a great place, yeah.
Congratulations. I just, it's hard for it, and you say this was down in the lowlands and the jungle and mm-hmm. everything, and I'm just, man, that's not at all like Ethiopia.
Oh, no, we're up the highlands, yeah.
I think that's just crazy. Well, thanks for being with us, Carmona
Tamrat,
civil engineering student still at Carnegie Mellon University, here with Alex Hills, who's the distinguished service professor. And Alex, why'd you bring these talented young professional consultants here to Alaska?
Well, there's some interest in UAA in adopting the kind of model that we use. I mentioned a little while ago that it's a very specific model that helps these, when they're still students, to actually operate as professionals. But we give them a specific structured approach to doing these projects, which relies on sustainability and client-driven problem, so it's all addressing a problem that's been identified by the client. The reason we're here with this team is because UAA has expressed some interest in adopting this same model. Over at UAA, there's a unit called the Center for Community Engagement and Learning that's headed by Professor Judith Owens Manley. She has a number of programs and projects which are all along the lines of helping students to become engaged with organizations, usually nonprofits, as part of their education. There are several different ways that you can go about doing that. We thought it would be good to expose the faculty and students at UAA to this model that we use, and so it's now under consideration by UAA as something that they might want to add to their program. I personally believe in it very strongly. I think the results that we see, both the results resulting work for the clients and the benefit that they get, and probably even a little more importantly for me, the benefit that our students and graduates get, it's just amazing. I have mentioned in the beginning that some students say this was the best part of their whole education at Carnegie Mellon. Others say it changed my life. So that's what we're looking at, and that's why I think it could be a model in Alaska, and maybe especially for projects in the Alaska bush.
How many students have you run through so far?
We've so far had about 80 or 90 students work on about 20 projects.
Wow.
In various parts of the world, all the way from Asia to the Pacific Islands, Africa, South America.
Well, I'm thinking about, Bush, Alaska right now as potential clients for something like this.
And I should say that within the Carnegie Mellon program, we have done one project in Bush, Alaska. Last summer in 2011, we did a project in Unalakleet for the Bering Strait School District. That was an IT project, helping them with education support system. We're at Carnegie Mellon, we're open to doing more projects in Alaska in addition to other nations, but really UAA might decide to really jump on this and to send UAA students out to rural Alaska.
Right. And how do the logistics work? I mean, somebody has to pay for all this and so forth.
Right. So I guess that's more on my side than the student side. But we our standard model, which we deviate from sometimes, but in general, we in the university cover the transportation costs out to the work site. So we sent Hermona to Peru and Ali Mo to Rwanda and so on. So we cover that expense. Then our client or our partner organization on the other end takes care of housing and incidental expenses like so a stipend to buy food and other incidentals. So that's how we do the cost split.
You keep it pretty simple then.
It's pretty simple, but you know, it also requires a commitment by the client.
Right.
And they have skin in the game. And I think that also helps with the success of these projects.
Yeah. Well, that's part of what I mean by keeping it simple. Yeah. So you basically can work out maybe deals with the air carriers, or at least you have a solid budgetable number to work with.
We just get the best fare we can get.
Yeah. But, so I can see where this could work. And what do you think? Turning to you, Hermona, how do you think you've benefited from this?
I mean, my trip and my time in Peru was definitely invaluable. Like I mentioned, I'm a civil engineer, and I had to kind of become a short-term management expert. So I learned so much and gained so many communication skills and consulting skills that I otherwise would not have had at all. And also living for 10 weeks in a small city in the Amazon, which is completely different than Pittsburgh, you definitely learn to adapt. And I was one of the few students that has gone to a site on their own. So I had to really become independent and learn to put myself out there to meet people or go explore. And you definitely grow more than you can imagine.
I am one of the things, I keep saying, Alaska could be a leader education-wise. And I think one of the things I mean about that is the multicultural, the intercultural, the cross-cultural nature of it. I think people don't realize how hard it really is to get past a certain level, a certain perfunctory level in dealing with multiple cultures. And yet, you're from Ethiopia, you grew up in Washington, D.C., you already got kind of a leg up, but now you've got this whole experience with a whole different culture. I mean, you're really becoming a citizen of the world.
I would hope so. I mean, I love to travel. I love to learn about other cultures and meet new people. So this experience just added to that. And, yeah.
And you, Alimu, same deal. Where do you see yourself in, say, 5 years, 10 years?
Oh, 5 years from now, I definitely see myself back in Africa.
Really?
Yeah, definitely. This has been a great experience for me. I learned a lot about myself, discovered new passion because I was doing some teaching and mentoring there and learned that I really enjoyed that. It was something that was making me think. And the other thing also was the leadership aspect of it. I told you previously, Guinea is like Rwanda. Some of the stuff I was observing in Rwanda, similar to stuff happening in Guinea. And, I consider myself really fortunate, having been educated at some of the best schools in the U.S. So I feel like, I really have to go back and give back to Africa and, use certain skills I learned here over there. And I think I'll be more valuable down there.
So go back to your own country, or do you have any idea?
Well, right now, I'll say the region of West Africa, not a particular country.
Yeah. How does your family feel about all this?
They don't know about it yet.
Fascinating.
Steve, you and I have talked a few times in the past about our educational system, and I've talked, at least, about how we're now living in a global economy. And so it's not just competition isn't just within our state or even within our country. Our competitors are in East Asia, to name an obvious example. So in order to operate in that global economy, in that global environment, I would say that our students need to have a skill set that is needed, but then they also need to be comfortable operating in an international environment. So you're looking at two or four people right now who have great skills because of the high-quality education they've gotten. But, as you've just pointed out, they're also very comfortable operating in this international environment. These are people that are going to be really successful going into the future.
Yeah, when you brought that up, it made me think about how competitive the American higher education system even is. That maybe we're kind of fooling ourselves in a way. Last week's show, where I put out the idea, well, don't worry about the budget. Tell us what we need the most, and if you didn't worry about the budget, and I thought it would be, and probably everybody would agree with. Early childhood education is probably your best bang for the buck in education dollars. But where the need was this post-secondary to college. That's where the hole is, where students coming out of high school and are not in any way qualified for college. There's a couple of years in there that are really squishy area that there's not good programs for. And I'm thinking, we might be losing ground. Internationally.
It's possible. Yeah.
Scary.
I have the same concerns that you do.
Yeah.
For here in Alaska, our educational system here in Alaska. But this is a model that we've been talking about that could be implemented at UAA. I don't work for UAA, but I am very interested in what's going on there and at UAF too. And this is something that they could do that would start to move us in a direction.
Yeah, and also in terms of turning out the graduates who are, moving society ahead.
Absolutely.
You know, real, true leadership. Well, the two of you, I want to thank you so much for being with us. I got no calls here, so I'm going to move on to the other two guests for the second half of the program so we can meet some more of these students. So you guys are kind of off the hook. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Alex, you just sit tight as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska, and by the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska, pebblepartnership.com. The Project Management Institute will present 3 one-day seminars at the Petroleum Club of Anchorage, October 9th, 10th, and 11th. Expert Neil Whitten will present No-Nonsense Advice for Successful Projects, Let's Talk, More No-Nonsense Advice for Project Success, and The Gift of Wisdom, Work-Life Balance for Today's Managers, Learn to Manage Projects, and more. Registration information at pmiak.org. This message sponsored by Project Management Institute, Alaska Chapter.
It's Talk of Alaska, and we're dealing with the subject of student professionals by talking to student professionals. What a shock. 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. If calling from Anchorage, it's a local call at 550-8422. Email talk@alaskapublic.org. If you'd like to engage with these young people who are busting through some educational frontiers, and their professor, Alex Hills, distinguished service professor at Carnegie Mellon University. They're all visiting in Alaska, and as I understand it, there was actually competition. These are the winners of a competition?
sort of, yeah, right. We are working on a little project together, and well, first of all, anyone from a university will know that funding is always an issue. We have to create some funds to support all the things that we're talking about. So the five of us that you see here, and plus a couple more, have decided to collaborate on a book. Ah. And we're writing a book together about these projects that we've been discussing. Each person is writing one chapter to describe the experience and really cover a lot of the same things that you've been asking about. And the proceeds from that book will go to support the program at Carnegie Mellon. So the people who finished writing their chapters were invited to come to Alaska. And I guess that's the contest you mean.
Uh-huh, yeah. Mm-hmm. My story. That's pretty cunning,
uh-huh,
Alex.
Yeah. And then, I've been around the block once or twice. But we've been working doing things like this radio show. There were a couple of events at UAA and the Matsu College yesterday. But with this event, it gets to be fun time and trip up to Denali Park and doing some other Alaska things.
All right. Well, I finally get this incredible international core of your students. I finally get to talk to somebody that comes from Louisiana. Adrian, do I have that right?
Yes.
Adrian White. Simple enough.
Yes, sir. Louisiana native, born and raised.
And so how did you come to go to school up in Pittsburgh?
Well, just my educational pursuits. I went to undergrad in mathematics, and through a series of internships, I discovered a knack for computer networks, which led me to Carnegie Mellon. They have a program that specializes in computer networking. It's at the Information Networking Institute. That's how I ended up at Carnegie Mellon.
Maybe you can help me on this. I've talked to Alex a little bit about this. Last time he was on the show, he was going into wireless networks in his book about that. But I don't even know where some of our computer stuff is happening now. They say it's in the cloud. What is the cloud?
The cloud is quite abstract, if you ask me. But, you know, the concept of the cloud is new, but the technology is quite old. It's been around. We just have a new name for it, if you ask me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the little bit I understand of it, you can chime in here, Alex, but the little bit I understand of it is that you can take your data, you break it down into smaller chunks, and then you make a packet out of that by putting an instruction on the back and the front, and then they can be sorted better.
Well, marketing-wise, the cloud is just a mechanism to store data, and businesses aren't owning their storage infrastructure now, so businesses are specializing in wide-scale data storage. And that's really what the cloud is all about. Businesses not owning their technology and outsourcing it pretty much to businesses that specialize in storage.
The technology piece of it, that's a great explanation.
Because there's talk about making a big old server farm in Alaska someplace because it's colder up here.
The technology piece of it was developed in part at Carnegie Mellon about 30 years ago, as Adrian
Wouldn't
said.
Wouldn't you know it?
Yeah. Funny thing. So that the word would have been distributed file systems, which means that your information is distributed out there and you don't know exactly where it is, but when you need it, you'll get it. Right?
Packet switching. That's what I heard. Packet switching was the buzzword I heard. Well, Adrian, it's great to have you with us on this show because we really are likely to get into the technological underbrush here with all you bright students. So I want to, I just had to make that digression. I want to hear about your project, though.
Well, my project took place in Ghana, 2008. And as Dr. Hills prefaced earlier, it was a life-changing experience for me. It was absolutely the best experience of my graduate school education. But the client with whom I worked was Ashesi University. It was based in the capital city of Accra. Actually, Ashesi means beginning in the Native Akan language. And at the time, Ashesi was really growing in its enrollment. It was founded in 2001 and started instruction in 2002 and had really become recognized by the Ghanaian population, getting recognized on the national level, the president, which really, you know, caused it to skyrocket in enrollment. But at the time, the school was managing its student records with Microsoft Excel, which really was not scalable, reliable. It was really a single point of failure and just not reasonable with the growth they had been experiencing. So the task at hand for myself and my colleague, Kate Dickens, was to identify a system within budget for Ashesi that would meet their needs, scalability, reliability. And so that's what Kate and I embarked upon. We researched various software packages that the university could choose from and did various test cases with faculty, staff, and students. And based on the feedback that we got, is how we made our recommendation to the university. And they were enthusiastic about how we arrived at our decision. There were several factors involved in our recommendation, but they readily welcomed what we had to say. They spent no time implementing what we recommended. We actually were able to finish our project 2 weeks ahead of schedule and were able to stick around and help them with the implementation, interface with the vendor, actually like schedule training with the vendor and everything.
Sounds like they were busting their asses so that you would still be there when it came time to actually get the thing installed.
Yeah.
We don't want to lose them yet. Well, so one thing that kind of surprised me about this is that usually people that write budgets don't really understand how much technology is really going to cost. And usually the consultant has to come back and say, well, actually, what you're looking for is going to cost you Y amount of dollars, not X amount of dollars.
In this case, the president of the university was a veteran of Microsoft.
Uh-huh.
So he was a pretty good client, wouldn't you say?
He was actually pretty open to, as far as budget is concerned, he wanted to see what could meet their needs before making a decision on cost.
Oh, that's real good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so did you end up with the Windows operating system?
No, actually, we went with actually an open source software package, meaning that clients wouldn't have to buy the software out of the gate. You could just freely download it. But what was of concern, critical concern to the university, was how it would be maintained. So that's where the cost actually came in, being able to maintain the software. But the cost that we came up with, it was manageable for them.
So did it work out for them?
Oh, absolutely. 4 years later, the university's actually moved. So at the time, they were in a residential neighborhood. The campus itself was three houses, so they were having classes, lecture, everything in three houses. They moved to a new campus last August 2011, and 4 years later, they are still using the same software system.
I see.
So very successful, yeah.
All right. Well, congratulations on that. And, you know, you've already talked about, like, the personal dimension of this. But also, I think you really feel you made a difference here.
I do. But it's made more of a difference in my life, I would say, because it made me believe in myself. I was nervous going over there because when I was not sure if I would have the technical skills to deliver. Although the project didn't turn out to be overly technical, I was still nervous about that, being able to deliver and meet their expectations. But after the fact, it allowed me to believe in myself and believe that I could affect positive change in the lives of people who would not otherwise be able to really do some things for themselves.
So did you make some calls to Professor Hill, or does he the one to call you?
Other way around. He called. he called.
He's a regular old mother hen, isn't he?
Yeah.
I think we used Skype audio on that one, didn't we?
Oh, yeah, that's the way to go.
Telephone calls are pretty expensive.
Our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 800-478-TALK. We're live in the studio right now with this cast of characters, student professionals. Email is talk@alaskapublic.org if you want to engage with any of these charming and interesting and highly qualified young people. You're more than welcome to dial it up on the phone or drop an email here. I got the screen right in front of me. That's 1-800-478-8255. Yi Sing Liu.
Yes. Hi.
How are you doing?
Doing good. How are you?
Not bad. That sounds Chinese to me, but it's not, right?
I was born in Singapore,
uh-huh.
which is just north of Indonesia, and Singapore is a city-state right in Southeast Asia.
Yes. And, I've known for years now there's been a lot of technological leadership in Singapore. So I can see where this might, be almost part of your heritage at this point.
There has been a lot of technological planning that the government is trying to push to the schools.
Uh-huh.
For example, now in high schools back home, there's actually been the push for the use of iPads in the class when students are having classes in school.
Yeah. So how did you come to send yourself off to Carnegie Mellon University?
Well, I had always been interested in technology and computers. I was kind of a geek in a way. So Carnegie Mellon was sort of a natural choice for me. When I was researching about universities in the U.S., Carnegie Mellon just came out as my first choice. So, yeah.
So when the projects came up, and you end up going to the South Pacific?
Yes, I was in working with Palau, which is in the Pacific Islands. That's actually in the vicinity of Guam and the Virgin Islands. I worked with the Ministry of Education in Palau. They are responsible for the elementary and middle school public education there. And I worked with the client to find out what their needs are, which was the student management system that they had, kind of similar to the project that Adriana had.
Mm-hmm.
They were actually, they had multiple copies and they were doing all the updating of student records manually using Microsoft Excel. So I actually worked with Tom, a computer science major, on this project of ours to develop a software application for them so that they could all update the student records all in a centralized location using a web application that we developed for them.
So instead of, I can see where Excel was probably not the best thing for this.
Yeah, definitely. They had different copies of Excel residing on different computers.
Oh, boy.
So I can have a particular record of this particular student, and another colleague of mine can have a totally separate record. So that was the main needs of the client. And what was really satisfying about our project was we did manage to help them develop an application such that they were able to do analysis on the test results of the students and identify problem areas of specific students. So if a student has weaknesses in grammar, the teacher can adapt the curriculum accordingly to help the student to build on this particular area that the student needs help in.
Wow. And that's working out for them?
Yeah, it actually worked out. And in the past, it took them 3 months to actually do such analysis on Excel. But with our software that we developed for them, the turnaround time, we actually managed to reduce it to 2 weeks. So they actually helped to improve their workflow processes a lot.
So there you are in Palau. That must have been a little bit different from what you're used to.
It's very different. Climate-wise, it's the same. It's hot and humid. But culture-wise, it was a huge adjustment. We actually had to spend 2 to 3 weeks starting out, getting to know the clients better. In fact, I spent most of the first 2 weeks interacting with the staff and colleagues from the Ministry of Education, going out with them over lunch and dinner, and even on weekend trips to do fishing. This helped to kind of build a trust and a relationship between them and us. So in a way, we are not seen as just parachuting in and say, oh, this is the best solution for you. But in a way, we are trying to involve them in sharing the problems and frustrations that they have, and then involving them in the process of brainstorming to find the best solution that suits their needs.
Wow. Well, now that is that's what people look for in a geek. Being able to relate to the client's needs. So what are you doing now?
I'm actually back in Singapore working in a water utility company. It's called the Public Utilities Board, where we work in a water treatment plant, helping to provide safe and portable, safe access to drinking water to everyone in Singapore.
I think Yi Sing is missing the United States a little, though. we've had lots of comments about Mexican food and different kind of food that you can't get in Singapore.
I'm surprised he hasn't asked you to take him out fishing.
I will come back again with that request.
So I was fishing in Palau. Must have been pretty good.
Oh, yeah, it was wonderful. In fact, it was one of the few activities that we did with the locals to go fishing out in Palau. And one interesting thing that we did was having to eat the fish live. So what they do is they actually cut up the fish live, and we actually just dipped the fish meat in lemon and soya sauce, and it was the best sashimi I ever had.
Mm. You're making me jealous. Yi Sing Liu is from Singapore, and he's back in Singapore now, but he's one of the four student professionals we have with us who are part of the Distinguished Service Program at Carnegie Mellon University. Dr. Alex Hills is their mentor. And are you the only one, or are there others that, do you have a squad of faculty there?
We have a number of faculty who are involved in this. The director of the program is a young professor named Professor Joe Mertz. And we were actually putting together this little surprise for him that I mentioned with the book and the fundraising. So that'll make his life a little easier, we hope.
Well, we have a caller here, Liz from Louisiana, and she wants to talk to Adrian.
Yes, Dr. Hill. I just wanted to congratulate you on your leadership and the initiative you've taken with these young people in carrying us forward with this technology. It is just remarkable. I know Adrian very well, as a matter of fact. That's my granddaughter.
Oh.
Just ecstatic to hear her presentation there this afternoon.
Are you calling from Louisiana now?
Yes, I'm in Louisiana now.
Listening on the internet, I suppose.
Yes, on the internet.
Wonderful.
Hi, grandmother.
Well,
is it okay to say hi, Mom?
Well, hi, my granddaughter.
What's what?
My heart is just leaping up to just hear of the great things you're doing, you young people are doing. It gives me so much hope in our future to hear of you.
That's why we wanted to do the program.
Yes, continue the great work, Dr. Hills. I've heard a great deal about you.
Well, thanks very much for your call.
Carnegie Mellon.
I thank the world of your granddaughter, and I hope we can meet in person sometime soon.
Well, I hope so. I look forward to that.
My mom never calls. I can't get her to listen to the radio to save my life. Thank you, Liz, for your call from Louisiana.
Thank you so very much. Good luck.
1-800-478-8255. 478-TALK. Now we've embarrassed Adrian all over the place here.
It's okay. I love my family.
That's great. I'm a little baffled as to where to go next. I mean, we've gotten so... Oh, yeah, we do. We have to take a break. That's what we'll do as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from the Federal Aviation Administration, setting standards for the operation of aircraft in airports. FAA.gov/go/flyalaska or toll free at 1-866-357-4704. And by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment. On the web at arcticwirerope.com.
Talk of Alaska, we're talking about student professionals. It's one of many, many areas you can go into when you're discussing education. There's the ivory tower effect. There's the alienating nature of a technological elite. There are the multicultural, cross-cultural challenges of a global economy. There's just the question of the interface between the real world, the work world, and the world of education. And we all have our hands on these things. It's all changing. Technology has entered into the picture. People have educational options they've never had before. People travel. I mean, I'm traveling to a degree that I couldn't even picture myself doing when I was growing up back in the 1950s. You know, so I'm a globetrotter now, you know. I'm always gets off to Europe or off to this or off to that or off to some remote part of Alaska. And you're even worse, Dr. Hills.
You know, sometimes people are surprised that there are these computer needs in developing nations. Mm-hmm. People don't usually think that developing nations would even have computers or have anything to do with computers. But the fact is they have lots of computers, in some cases because they were donated, and they don't know exactly what to do with them. And that's where the geeks come in. And by the way, we took a survey and we found out that no one in this room objects to being called a geek. Geek is a badge of honor.
Yeah.
When we were titling the presentation at UAA, some of the folks at UAA thought, that's a little bit insulting.
It's pejorative, yeah.
Not with us. That's not how we feel about it.
Wow. Well, I would think that some of these donated computers out there floating around the third world will be junk. We'd have to say.
It's a powerful technology, and it helps a lot of people. I mean, it's surprising, but even in developing nations.
Mm-hmm. Well, not in all cases are they donated. So in the case of Ghana, there are a lot of cyber cafes. So people really do have the internet at their, I wouldn't say at their fingertips, but it is accessible. When I was there, internet access was via cyber cafe. But things are changing now. They are getting internet to their homes, which really isn't usually the case in Africa, but things are changing in that direction.
And the connectivity?
Well, it's much slower than the United States, so typically our data rates are like megabits per second. I checked out some stuff maybe a couple of weeks ago. It's still in the kilobytes per second, so that's like a, I guess, 10 times difference. So we're 10 times faster than they are still, but I think it's positive that they do value that sort of infrastructure.
And wireless infrastructure, is it going up in Ghana? I would think you got your village Ghana and you got your city Ghana.
Well, I'm not particularly sure because I was in a very populated area. Yeah. Mostly everything is still wired. So.
Yeah, and in Singapore, I picture Singapore being pretty wireless savvy.
It has one of the highest adoption rate in terms of wireless network. Of course, recently there was a recent push to use fiber optics, which provides a much faster access to the internet. But of course, mm-hmm. that's still in the pipeline. They're still working on it.
Yeah, but I mean, what's taken off in the United States now is taken off in other places earlier, as I understand it, was a lot of these handheld devices which require a great broadband in order to, mm-hmm. you know, do anything meaningful.
Alimo's not at the microphone right now, but in his project in Rwanda at the residential high school for the victims of the genocide, he actually, with his partner, designed and installed a fairly extensive wireless network there.
Wow.
They had a little advice from their professor on that one.
Nice going there, Alimu. you got Dr. Hills to roll up his sleeves on that one.
He did. But, you know, speaking of the penetration of computers in developing nations, the coming out of MIT, there's the one laptop per child where they have $100 computers that are going out to school children all over the developing world. It's pretty impressive.
20 seconds. Thanks so much for being with us, everybody. Thanks to Josh Edge, and thanks to Dave Waldron. I'm Steve Heimel. So long.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Ensuring our youth understand the need for workplace safety will help prevent injuries. If your middle or high school is interested in having a youth representative speak to your students about workplace safety, call Alaska Occupational Safety and Health Youth Safety at 1-800-656-4972. This message is sponsored by Alaska Labor Standards and Safety. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.